The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Ethos, Atlanta Hawks team coverage podcast, formerly known as Hoop Ball Hawks. We cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. I'm your host, Brad Harden, recording live from Atlanta, Georgia on Monday, January 9th, National Championship Game Day, college football playoff final is tonight for the home state Georgia Bulldogs as they take on the TCU Horned Frogs in SoFi Stadium in LA. So this episode will be released the day after the national title game, to give respect to the Georgia Bulldogs, who spanked my LSU Tigers. And I'm not surprised by that spanking. So I want to give listeners here in the Atlanta area and the state of Georgia and the region who are Georgia Bulldogs fans and college football fans who may listen to this podcast a whole day to just embark on the finality of a very great college football season. But obviously this is a basketball podcast. We talk about the Atlanta Hawks, who I wanted 3-1 on the West Coast road trip. That was my best case scenario. But I'll take a split. I will take a split. And to go into LA, take on the Clippers and Lakers, two games in 3 days in the same arena, and split. I hated how they came out against the Lakers and how flat, uninspired, unenergetic they were. But they flipped it around, rallied. They went on a 17-4 run. They were down 102-91 in the fourth quarter. Went on a 17-4 run led by Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter to come back and win this game in L.A., split the trip in L.A., and ultimately split the West Coast road trip 2-2 before they come back here to Atlanta Wednesday night to take on the Milwaukee Bucks on ESPN. And like I said, I will take a West Coast road trip split. I will take it. And then looking back on the Golden State Warriors loss, that was the one that got away. If it could have been 3-1 on that West Coast road trip, it was that Golden State Warriors game that I point to. Because the way they came out against the Lakers, they just didn't show up until the third quarter. They were flat. I don't know if they were partying in L.A. Please, no more parties in L.A. But certainly they didn't bring it in the same against the Golden State Warriors. In the two losses out west, the common denominator was how the Hawks started the game. Golden State, they were shooting poorly from the field, bad perimeter defense, missing free throws, but they rallied back to take the lead, gain the lead, lose it. Warriors put it in overtime, and as we talked about the episode before, rebounding was a huge, huge issue that game, and particularly offensive rebounds, and they were out-rebounded on the offensive glass 23-10 in favor of the Golden State Warriors. Against the Lakers, they just flat-out just ran out the gym. They got ran out of the gym. The moment's too big, pissed down their leg. You know the guy from Instagram and Twitter, but it certainly seemed like that. So the common denominator in their two losses was how they started. In their two wins against Sacramento and then last night against the Los Angeles Clippers, they got out to fast starts, played with great energy on both ends of the floor. They had great ball movement, and they played team basketball. Team basketball, which is what I talked about last episode. That was the formula in that Sacramento win that they found out. Starting fast, getting everybody involved, playing with energy and effort on both ends of the floor, playing as a team, and relying on the team down the stretch. They did the same thing last night in the fourth quarter, and there was some people who maybe, you know, the fourth game of the West Coast road trip, their legs certainly weren't underneath them. Bogey certainly did not have his legs underneath them. It wasn't the explosive John Collins performance that we've been seeing the last four or five games, but certainly he was still solid. It wasn't a great offensive day for DeJounte Murray. But Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter, I thought Trae Young was the offensive player of the game, and the defensive player of the game last night was DeAndre Hunter with his defense on Kawhi Leonard last night. He was great. And Kawhi is hard to stop. He still had his points. I want to say he had 28 last night. As I fat check myself, Kawhi had 29 points, but he had 29 points on 23 shots. So it wasn't an efficient 29 points. He did get 10 free throw attempts, made 9 of them. And Kawhi had his 7 rebounds, his 4 assists, his 2 steals to show you that he's still one of the premier two-way players in the NBA. And certainly somebody that, if the Hawks had, they would be a great team. But with his load management, we have dubbed DeAndre Hunter a while ago Baby Kawhi. And he showed Kawhi-esque two-way play last night. So he was extremely pivotal for the Atlanta Hawks. So led by Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter, the second unit really played well yesterday. In particular, got to give my flowers to AJ Griffin, 3-for-3 in 11 minutes. He was taken out down the stretch because his defense was a liability, but very impactful 11 minutes, +3 on a +-minus last night. Frank Kaminsky, who everyone rolls their eyes at and scoffs when he gets in the game, which I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. 4 points in 11 minutes, had 5 rebounds, 1 assist. Hit 2 of 4 free throw attempts. So could have had 6 points if you made all your free throws. So, and he was the third highest, tied for the third highest plus minus on the team. And Jalen Johnson, who does not necessarily get consistent minutes, but when he plays with confidence, he is a difference maker off the bench with his athleticism, with his improved shooting, his passing. No assist last night, but he's a very underrated passer for a forward, especially a young small forward who hasn't played a ton of basketball in his life. A lot of people forget he's athletic, but he is still raw and still needs to be not refined, but grow his game and grow a maturity. And we're seeing that in the last few weeks with how he's played in spurts. Last night he had 13 points, 5 of 6 shooting from the floor, 2 of 3 from 3, 50% from the free throw line, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, a block. Really good game from Jalen Johnson last night. I thought he provided some really, really great minutes in the time that he got in the game. Last night's win over the Clippers improves the Hawks to 19-21 overall. They're in 10th in the Eastern Conference. Still not where they want to be. Last night's win was Nate McMillan's 750th win of his career. So congrats to Nate McMillan. And I missed it on the last podcast. Trae Young did get his 8,000th career point in the league already on this West Coast road trip. So two really great accomplishments. But still a lot more work to be done. Like I said, when you look at the numbers last night, Trae Young, who scored 14 of his 30 points in the fourth quarter, he was clutch. He was vintage clutch Trae Young, which we have not really seen this year. So it was really great to see his performance last night. He had 30 points, 8 assists, 2 rebounds, and 1 steal. As I mentioned, DeAndre Hunter had a really good game, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. DeJounte Murray finished with 16 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1 steal. John Collins had 13 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 blocks. even though it wasn't a great offensive performance, I thought his defense was pretty solid. Because guarding Zubac in the paint is a load. And Zubac had his game, and we'll talk about his numbers here in a bit. Onyeka Okongwu, 5 points in the start, 9 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 assists. I already said Jalen Johnson's number, and then A.J. Griffin ended with 7 points, hitting all of his field goal attempts. So it was a great team win. Vintage Trae Young, great defensive stops down the stretch. They really executed in the fourth quarter. And like I said before, in the two L's, it was poor energy to start the game, and it took them in both games against the Lakers and the Warriors halftime to get it in the gear and come back to life. That is a habit that I want snuffed out, and I want that left out on the West Coast. I don't want that traveling back in their luggage here to Atlanta. That's my personal preference. Probably a lot of fans' preference as well. We don't like those slow starts. We don't like them. We don't want to see them again. But I'm glad that they reversed that last night. And like I said, in the wins, better energy, better ball movement, which enabled players outside of Trae Young and DeJounte Murray to step up. Like last night, it was Jalen Johnson and DeAndre Hunter. In the Sacramento game, it was Bogey. It was John Collins. It was Hunter. Again, it was DeJounte Murray. But as of right now, it's clear with, even with the stellar play from John Collins as of late, DeAndre Hunter is their third option scoring right now. They were really high on him in the offseason. They were really reluctant to let him go. They weren't going to include him in trade talks unless it was a huge piece. But you see why the Hawks were high on DeAndre Hunter with him having a healthy offseason. This is the most confident and the best basketball that I've seen him play on both ends of the floor since he's been in the NBA. So you see why we paid him. And if we can just keep him healthy, there is a bright future. Now, I don't know if his ceiling is as high as a Kawhi, but certainly his floor continues to rise with his elevated play. And if he continues to play with this confidence, play with this aggressiveness, that's one thing that we've been noticing, a lot more aggressive, getting a shot, scoring in mid-range, getting to the rim. If we can continue to get that play from DeAndre Hunter, it's going to pay dividends down the stretch for us as a third option, because he was just hitting just tough shots, three-pointers, mid-range jumpers, getting to the rim, guarding Kawhi Leonard with the best of them. And even though Kawhi still did Kawhi things, DeAndre Hunter has some key stops down the stretch to keep Kawhi from having his patented game winner or big shot, big fourth quarter to overcome the surge that was Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks in the fourth quarter. So they really finished last night, which was the great thing that I saw. And also, as I mentioned before, the second unit really provided a lift. I mentioned Jalen Johnson, AJ Griffin, Frank Kaminsky. They provided a real nice lift in last night's game. We're not a great bench. We're not. But we're going to need games where they overperform and play with energy and effort and pace when they are on the court. And things are kind of thrown off, because you have Capella, who's been out for 7 games now. Onyeka Okongwu normally provides that energy and spark off the bench defensively in that second union. When you have Aaron Holiday, you have Bogey, who is leading the second unit in scoring. You have A.J. Griffin, who they run sets for and get him some shots, especially in that mid-range, and let him go to work. Jalen Johnson when he gets his minutes. And certainly Jalen Johnson's been getting more minutes than Justin Holiday, to the relief of a lot of Hawks fans. But the second unit, to start the year off, they had a lot of continuity. And with injuries, it got kind of thrown off because people were thrusted into the starting lineup and getting more roles and more touches. And they were playing better in their roles and playing with more energy and effort, but wasn't sustainable, which is why they are bench players. So it's something that the Hawks hope to get back, Because I saw something on Twitter, Brad Rowland tweeted it out, and I retweeted it, that still the best lineup net change for the Hawks is the original starting lineup. When you have Trey at the one, Murray at the two, DeAndre Hunter at the three, John Collins at the four, and Capella at the five. Missing Capella has been eye-opening this year, and I hope that people are putting more respect on Capella's name. Is a stretch five nice? Yes. Stretch five is always nice. A Miles Turner would be great on his team. But the leadership, the defensive anchor, which people scoff at, if Capella's your best defensive player, we're not a good defense. Shut up. Shut up. Because you're clearly seeing that rim protection and rebounding has been a glaring issue, even though Okongwu's been playing extended minutes with Capella out, which a lot of you wanted him to start over Capella, and you're seeing that he's undersized to play the five. He can be serviceable, but I think his reaching his true potential, it will be playing a power forward position in the NBA. It won't be the center, which is why you still need Capella, and him being out seven straight games has been tough for the Hawks, especially on the glass. The Hawks are now 4-9 this year without Capella. The record with Capella, 15-12. They're three games above 500 when Capella plays. When Capella doesn't play, you're five games under 500, which right now we're two games under 500 as it's set, as we set right now here on Monday, January 9th. So certainly not where we want to be, but the Hawks just need to get healthy. Just need to get healthy. And we're going to certainly need him with a big matchup looming on Wednesday against the Milwaukee Bucks. We're going to certainly need him. The goal is to get one more episode to preview that Milwaukee Bucks game on Wednesday. So you'll get an episode on Wednesday previewing that game. It'll be shorter than this one. But I'm hoping by the time that episode comes out, Capella's back. I pray that he's back because we've been getting eaten alive on the boards. And last night was no different. Last night was no different. Zubac was getting any and everything he wanted around the rim as far as rebounding the ball. I thought they rebounded extraordinarily well as a team last night. They out-rebounded the Hawks 59-43. Out of the 59 Clippers rebounds, Zubac had 18 of those. Moses Brown off the bench had 10 of those. So 28 rebounds out of 59 for the Clippers were from their centers. Okongwu last night, serviceable, 9 rebounds. John Collins got his hands dirty, 9 rebounds. Murray had 5. Hunter had 4. Kaminsky had 5 in 11 minutes, which you can take it or leave that. Bogey had 4. Jalen Johnson had 4. So people were getting into the paint and rebounding, but certainly missing Capella hurts this team. And even with Capella, we don't win a lot of rebounding margins, but it is glaring with him out. The offensive rebound margin last night, in 21-7 in favor of the Clippers. 21 offensive rebounds for the Clippers, 7 for the Hawks. Defensive rebounds, the Clippers 1+2. Easier to manage. But certainly, and in the Lakers game, rebounding was still an issue as well. They got out-rebounded by 12, 51-39. And most of those rebounds, they got out-rebounded on the defensive end. But when you go back and look at the numbers for that Lakers game, they were abysmal in that first half. Ended up shooting just under 46% from the floor, whereas the Lakers shot 55% from the floor. They were getting anything they wanted, especially in the paint. They outscored the Hawks 66-50 in the paint. And then one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the Los Angeles Lakers made 16 threes on Friday night and shot just under 46% from three. Scored 130 points, just ran the Hawks out of the gym. Wasn't close. didn't play with effort. They got killed in a fast break, 26-12 in favor of the Lakers. The Lakers still committed 18 turnovers. The Hawks only had 12, but it didn't help. It didn't help. You didn't help how you started the game, and you tried. You know, you had a really good third quarter, 33-point third quarter. You saw some strides to try to cut into that lead, but they got behind too far, too early, and they ended up losing 130-114. John Collins had a solid game, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 blocks, but he was 7 of 18 from the floor, so not an efficient night. Okongwu, 10 points, 7 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 block, but he was minus 17 on plus minus. DeAndre Hunter, solid game, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 5 of 13 from the floor, 2 of 5 from 3, but minus 12, plus minus. The highest plus minus on the team was Trae Young. Trae Young had 2 great games in L.A., and I mean, he has a home there, so maybe he feels at home with the Lakers, which I'm not trying to put a narrative out there, but I have talked privately that if an L.A. team were to want Trae Young, I think it'd be the Clippers. I really think it'd be the Clippers that he ends up with in L.A., but that's neither here nor there. He had 32 points on Friday night, 50% from the floor, 2 of 8 from 3, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 steals. So good stat line outside of the 6 turnovers. Murray struggled again, 16 points on 18 field goal attempts, 6 assists, 1 rebound, 1 steal, minus 11 and plus minus. So second lowest plus minus in the starting lineup. And then off the bench, your best bench player was Bogey, 10 points off the bench on 7 attempts, but he had the worst plus minus on the team. Worst. AJ Griffin only gave you 5. Aaron Holiday gave you 6. Guy ran out of gym. Missed 5 free throws. They were set. The Hawks are a north of 80% free throw shooting team. Shot 77% on Friday night. I mean, you get those 5 free throws back, would have made a difference. You still would have lost by, if everything stayed the same, you still lose by 11. So you give up 37 first quarter points. You give up 33 second quarter points. You get outscored by 12 in the second quarter. So if you have a little better second quarter and then have maybe the same output in the third or fourth, it's a little bit manageable game, but it's about how you start. LeBron James had a quiet 25 points. You know, Thomas Bryant killed the Hawks again. 19 points, 13 rebounds. He had a field day with Capella out. Dennis Schroeder continues to play well for the Lakers. 21 points for him. Off the bench, you had Russ with almost a triple-double. 18 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. He's up for 6th man of the year. He's been really well. He's played really well since he's relegated to the bench for this Lakers team. And then Kendrick Nunn was the killer all night. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember the last time I seen Kendrick Nunn play this well. It was so frustrating to watch. But in 27 minutes, he had 23 points. 9 of 16 from the floor, 3 of 7 from 3. And then Christie, the rookie, 8 points off the bench. So they had great bench play to supplement some of the lackluster performances from their starters. But the Lakers ended up with 3 players with over 20 points. And you had 5 players with over 18 points for the Lakers. They just flat out dominated the Hawks. But they got their get back in L.A. with their performance last night to kind of wash that taste out your mouth. Even though you got swept by the Lakers, which sucks. It sucks. You took advantage of a Clippers team that has now lost 6 straight games, I want to say. They're slumping, so you really took advantage of a Clippers team that's been struggling. They're one of the worst offensive teams in the NBA, but a really good defensive team. So to hold a Clippers team to under 39% shooting is good. That's really good. They missed 7 free throws for the Clippers. That's excellent. Clippers only shot 33% from 3. That is extremely excellent. Marcus Morris had 15 points on 16 field goal attempts. We'll take that. Zubac, again, 17 points, 18 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block last night. Mann had 14 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. I already said Kawhi's number, Nicholas Batum, 5 fouls, but ended the game with 6 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, the Swiss Army knife for the Clippers. And off the bench, Norman Powell, who they said on the broadcast, averages 19 points when he against the Hawks in his career, was below his career average against the Hawks. 14 points, 3 of 13 shooting from the floor, 8 rebounds for Moses Brown off the bench. Sorry, 8 points, 10 rebounds for Moses Brown off the bench. John Wall was not a factor, and Reggie Jackson only played 8 minutes. So you're going to take that. You're going to take what the team gives you. And I'm going to give you guys a real quick break before I wrap up some of my final thoughts from this road trip last night, some narratives on the team, so you guys know the drill. First, this quick plug. Okay, listeners, it's time to talk a little fantasy hoops. Now, I don't know about you. I'm in several fantasy leagues, and every fantasy league that you are in, you have a rival. Pokemon, Ash Ketchum had Gary, and I know you have your Gary out there. So it's time to beat Gary and get the insight that you need to take your stuff to the next level and win a fantasy basketball championship. Do you remember who led you to Tyrese Halliburton, DeJounte Murray, Terry Rozier, and Mikal Bridges before any other rank list? I know which one. It's the Brewskis 150. And you probably turn those huge wins into some cash or a fantasy basketball championship. This year, the Brewski 150 is on sale for a limited time. And Ethos 360 subscribers can get access in less than a week. Head to sportsethos.com and click on the premium tab to grab membership information or the draft guide today. And yes, to answer your most important question, the Brewski 150 is included in both options. Check back daily for more new features and go dominate your leagues, beat Gary with the help of Sports Ethos. All right, and we are back. Some final thoughts from last night's game. I thought Onyeka Okongwu was solid on the defensive end. He did a great job of staying on the floor and not fouling out. The key is not getting John Collins and Okongwu in foul trouble, especially with Clint Capela out. I think when Clint Capela plays, that's still something that we have to manage. We have to manage their foul situation as best as we possibly can because we're not a deep team in the front court. We're not. And I continue to say on this program, my only gripe about Travis Schlenk, and he had a lot of dysfunction that he was working with that a lot of people are not aware of. I know people tell me all the time, you know, Tony Ressler said he doesn't mind spending over the luxury tax. Well, Travis Schlenk wanted to go over the luxury tax. Tony Ressler, who rather save money, he put that narrative out. So then when it didn't happen, it was easy to force Travis Schlenk out of his role. I'm going to say that now. He put that out there saying, I don't mind spending over the luxury cap. And he said that, but didn't do what he said he was going to do. And so it justifies Travis Schlenk being pushed out of his role because ultimately he's going to get scapegoated. You're going to scapegoat the president of basketball operations and not the owner, even though it's the owner's money. And that owner rather have a $15 million reimbursement coming to him in August. That same owner that's probably going to politic for a lot of 10-day contracts as a quick fix as far as for depth issues or holes on his team. Thursday, January 5th was the first day in which teams can sign 10-day contracts. And for those who are not familiar, a 10-day contract is exactly what it sounds like. It's a contract for the greater of 10 days or 3 games. It's a temporary deal designed to give a team a bit of help for a short period of time. And there's a couple of rules for 10-day contracts. First, a team must have an open roster spot to sign the player. And unlike the previous season, and this is according to Spotrac, where I'm reading this right now, unlike last season, when teams were regularly given additional hardship spots due to the COVID-related absences, that hasn't happened this year. The second rule for a 10-day contract, so you have to have an open roster spot, and the second rule is that with a 10-day contract, you have to be aware of teams that are limited to signing the same player to only two 10-day deals. So you can only sign the same player to two 10-day deals. And then after the second 10-day deal is complete, if the team wants to keep that player, they must sign them for the remainder of the season. So you can sign a player, you can like what he does in a three-game time span or 10 days, give him another 10-day contract. So your maximum, get 6 games. You get 6 games out of him. It's a quick run flat. Not run flat, but a patch, a tire patch. That's what this is, to keep the thing rolling. It's a cheap fix. And teams who can currently sign 10-day contracts, your Atlanta Hawks is number one on the list. And it also includes the Hornets, the Cavaliers, Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, Heat, Thunder, 76ers, Suns, Trailblazers, and Raptors. But, and that could include some veterans. So, theoretically, if the Hawks need some front court depth, Hassan Whiteside and DeMarcus Cousins are available. You can do two 10-day contracts and put them on your team. I'd really look at Hassan Whiteside. Well, I mean, Boogie Cousins wouldn't be bad, depending on how he's feeling, how he physically is right now. But those are two potential flyers the Hawks can take. Other big veterans that are out there that could be on a 10-day route, I mean, Carmelo Anthony. If you want more depth as far as the forward position, Isaiah Thomas, if you want more guard depth, but I highly doubt that. You can do G League call-ups, so you can sign G League players to 10-day contracts and bring them on to your roster. And there's several players out there, and the Skyhawks do have a really good team this year, so maybe they take a flyer on one of their players internally and give them an opportunity to come up for a 10-day contract. But if I were the Hawks, front court depth has been an issue. I think if you add a Hassan Whiteside to your team, to this Hawks team, and you move Okongwu to the four, I think it severely helps your defense. I think it gives you another big body to throw the ball down to as far as in the paint. And he didn't play bad for the Jazz last season. He was a pretty effective player on both ends of the floor. And same thing with DeMarcus Cousins. He showed enough with the Nuggets and the Bucks that maybe he can have a backup center spot in the NBA. But the question is, what role does he want? And how much does he play? I mean, so that's something I'm looking out for. Hassan Whiteside would be a very interesting 10-day contract veteran that I could see the Hawks potentially throwing at. I mean, give him two 10-day contracts, see how it helps. Especially with Capella being out for 7 games, we don't know. There's no timetable on when he comes back. But when he does come back, having Hassan Whiteside to fall back on to kind of bring him back slowly, bringing Capella back slowly from that calf injury could be a very smart play for this Atlanta Hawks team. So we'll see who gets a 10-day contract or if the Hawks give out a 10-day contract. Certainly one of the teams that have a roster spot. Hassan Whiteside meets a need. I think that is a flyer that the Hawks should take, in my opinion. But back to last night's game and overall thoughts. A lot of people were upset that Bogey was playing some minutes and he was struggling last night. Really struggled last night. And I want to say that he was 2 of 12 from the floor. And I'm pulling up the stats back up right now. Yeah, he was 2 of 13 from the floor for 4 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds last night, 1 steal. And they were like, and DeAndre Hunter had the hot hand. So they were like, why is Bogey in the game? Why is Bogey in the game? Why is Bogey in the game? Well, players need rest. Due to injury, you know, our rotations aren't the normal rotations. And people scoff at minutes given to certain players like Kaminsky, like a Justin Holiday. Like I said, with the lack of depth on this team and then injuries, that's a recipe for disaster. So Nate McMillan has to try new things to keep players fresh, deal with the injuries, and try new things to try to shake some things up. Like, I understand your frustration, but this is the team that's given to you. You have to be creative with the minutes to preserve your players because injuries are already a prevalent issue on the Hawks team, and we cannot afford another one. We're as good as we've been in a bit, but we're still missing a huge piece in Clint Capela. Huge piece. And Bogey playing last night was to spell DeAndre Hunter for the final stretch, which he got in, and you guys were happy again. And he finished the game strong. But Bogey's shot-making and ability to catch fire at any time offensively, especially as a bench player, is so beneficial for this Hawks team. It's so beneficial. And sometimes he needs to work through his shooting slumps. And other times when he's a liability, making mistakes, turning over the ball, missing shots, not playing great defensively, you have to take him out. But you have to give your players rest. You have to. A lot of people, you know, complain on Twitter acting like managing an NBA team and coaching an NBA team is easy. Managing egos, managing a locker room, managing lineups, and overseeing offensive and defensive game plans from your coordinators, that's not an easy job. That's why there's only 30 of them in the NBA. Same thing for the NFL. Being an NFL head coach is a hard job. That's why there's only 32 positions in the league. People do not extend grace because they want to see the things that they want to see. They're quick to, you know, and I will give Nate McMillan his, you know, his critiques when they're warranted. But they're quick to demonize and throw rocks and cast stones at Nate McMillan when he does wrong. But when they pull out a win last night, there's no one saying anything about the great job that he did managing this team down the stretch. But those are also the same people who are rooting for Nate McMillan to fail so the Hawks fire him. But yet you want this team back in the playoffs and you want this team to be good. And like I continue to say on this podcast, there's a lot of bigger things behind the scenes in the front office that are red flags. And smoke is coming out of that front office because of dysfunction. And there's a lot of issues that are out of Nate McMillan's control that we continue to place blame on him. I appreciate him. He's not the greatest coach. He can be stubborn. He's a little outdated. But, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about John Collins' interview with Sam Amick from The Athletic that dropped today. But certainly, he did a really good job last night managing that team, and I would be remiss if I did not mention it. But back to Bogey. Bogey has struggled the last two games, and I think it may – I mean, we haven't really done load management with him, really. We really hadn't put him on a minutes restriction, and we've really just kind of let him go out there and play. And it just seems like the last couple of games, his legs aren't underneath him. And maybe a few days rest – thankfully, the game is not till Wednesday here in Atlanta. Maybe a few days rest will help Bogey get his shot back. So I expect him to be really good against the Milwaukee Bucks after a few days rest. I expect him to have a really good game, actually. I think it'll be one of those 18-point performances off the bench, 18 points plus performances off the bench for Bogey. And we're going to forget all about him having two bad games in L.A. That's just my take on it. I thought last night was Trey's best game of the season, managing the game, making the right decision, picking and choosing his moments, attacking the paint, you know, taking advantage of what the defense was giving him. They did a lot of drop coverage. He killed them on drop coverage by penetrating the lane and getting that floater off. They could not stop him, especially in that fourth quarter. 14 points in the fourth quarter, 3 assists. He shot 75% from the floor, 100% from three, and 100% from the free throw line. He was on fire in that fourth quarter. That was one of the best finishes of the season. And he was clutch down the stretch for the Hawks. And he had the best plus-minus on the team. So, like I said, it was one of his better performances of the season. You know, even with four turnovers. Even with four turnovers. It was one of his better performances, in my opinion. And in the last, I can't remember how many games, but in the last, I would say 10 games, he's averaging 29 points per game, 9 assists per game, just under 10, over 3 rebounds a game, averaging just under 3 three-pointers made per game, shooting just under 47% from the floor, 39% from 3, just under 89% from the free throw line, and true shooting percentage is at 61.8%. He's played well. He has played well. He's definitely becoming more efficient. And I have been a critic of him on his program. And I think being more objective is good, because there are things that Trae Young does need to get better at. Shot selection in the fourth quarter. If you're going to call for your pick and rolls, which is Trae Young that calls it, not Naaman Millen, guys. Trae Young calls it. If you're going to do it, pick and choose the right moments. If you don't see what you like, pass out of it. Don't continue to dribble it. Don't put yourself onto the back. Don't use the pick and roll. Get on the baseline, and next thing you know, they're trapping you, and you have two big bodies, you know, blinding your passing lanes, and now you chuck up a three that are trying to initiate a foul, or you turn the ball over. The key is Trae Young, and I said this on this program last episode. The key is Trae Young and his managing of the game in the fourth quarter. A lot of the fourth quarter woes are on Trae Young. I'm going to say that again. A lot of the fourth quarter woes are on Trae Young. There have been times in the last few weeks when the team is playing well in the fourth quarter when DeJounte Murray leads them. Trae gets on the floor, and next thing you know, he's trying to, you know, run the offense through him, which rightfully so, he's your best player, but not making the best decisions, shooting some shots that he should not shoot, shooting early in the shot clock, trying to trade baskets with the other team instead of running the offense and getting the best look possible, trying to force fouls and not getting them, and now it's a turnover. Bad shot selection, now long rebound for the team, and the opposing team gets to get in fast break or get down there before the Hawks can set up the defense, and then they get an easy look. Those little things, that fourth quarter execution, which a lot of people want to put on Naaman Millen, I'm going to put on Trae Young. That was one of the things that he did really good last night. Fourth quarter execution was much better last night. And if we can get that Trae Young in the fourth quarter every game, and we still have Murray to have his make his impact defensively, even if he's not scoring a lot, same thing with DeAndre Hunter and the others, everybody else in the starting lineup, you know, do their things defensively, execute, but you know Trae Young is going to be leading the offense. And if he makes the right plays down the stretch, the Hawks will win more games than they lose, because that's your best player. Even though I think DeJounte Murray needs to be the leader of this team, and I think Trae Young needs to show more leadership qualities, he led last night. He led through picking and choosing his moments and taking what the defense was giving him and executing the right play at the right time. So I'm going to say this again. The big key to turn this around is on Trae Young. how you lead by example, how you lead this team by your decision making as the primary ball handler on this team, those and your fourth quarter execution, those are going to be the keys to the Hawks continuing to win. And I thought he did an excellent job, so I wanted to tip my cap to Trae Young there for his performance last night. But last thing I want to say, I want to talk a little bit more about the John Collins interview with Sam Amick from The Athletic. So Sam Amick from The Athletic interviewed John Collins after the Kings win. And it was really great insight into how John Collins remains John Collins and maintaining his peace and his focus in the midst of all the dysfunction and uncertainty as far as his future, his place on the team. And the article sure as hell made me respect him as a person even more than I already did. I love John Collins. He's a consummate professional. He's one of my favorite players on his team from how he carries himself. I think he's the ultimate teammate. And I think no player on the team has dealt with as much adversity as him as far as their tenure on the Hawks. I think nobody on the Hawks team that's been here longer than 2-3 seasons. Because there's been a lot of, you know, turnover and revolving doors here in Atlanta with, you know, role players. But no one has dealt with what John Collins has had to deal with. And I don't know how he does it. And his article gave great insight into how he does. And one of the questions they asked him is, if you're breaking it down and unpacking it, what's been missing to this point, talking about this Hawks team? And John Collins responded, there's no one thing. He said, I definitely feel like having a whole new group of guys in this roster is one thing. Adding a big-time player in DeJounte Murray onto the squad is another thing. But he said, but I don't think there's anything missing on his squad. He thinks it's more assimilation into who we are, which is goes back to a theme that Nate McMillan said Media Day. Figuring out this Hawks team identity. Who is this Hawks team? What are they going to hang their hat on? And because of the inconsistencies this season, that answer has not been figured out. The inconsistencies in their play, the injuries, their identity has still not been figured out, which is why they are 19-21 and not in the top half of the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. But John Collins said it's more assimilation into who we are and what we want to be as a team. Where we can go. But what are they missing, he said. I don't think we have anything missing. I think we're loaded, but it's just mentally. A lot of their issues are between the ears. Dealing with adversity, dealing with dysfunction, inconsistency maybe in minutes for role players, different rotations, injuries, and so forth. There's a lot of things that this team's dealing with that I don't think a lot of people want to use as an excuse, but it is what it is. And so Sam Amick asked another question. He asked, is it strategic type stuff, chemistry type stuff, personal dynamics, all the above? And John Collins says it's all of the above. Injuries, guys not being available. It's adding young guys into our lineup, adding a player like DeJounte Murray, adding another all-star to the group. All that stuff adds an effect to what already makes playing and winning in the league so hard. It's hard to win, guys. It's hard. It really is hard to win a game, as we're seeing right now. As the Clippers are seeing, they've lost six straight. If anybody knows in the NBA, ask the Clippers, who we just beat. And John Collins says, so it's just hard to quantify one thing as in what to account for as far as what's going on. And he said that there was one thing that Nate McMillan said to them the morning before the Kings game when they were breaking down film. And he said, when you look at film, look at yourself. And he said, I always try to look at myself, John Collins says. He said, for me, I want to make threes. So he said, in my part, I can say I'm part of the issue as far as the problems on the team with his three-point shooting. That's accountability, guys. That's what leaders do. DeJounte Murray, that's a leader. He calls for accountability for himself. That's something that needs to be more prevalent on this team. When you hold yourself accountable, it shows you know, that you're humble, that you're selfless, and that you want to improve for the sake of improving for you, but improving for this team. And John Collins said this in his interview, which gave me even more respect for him. But he says it's something that he's working hard as hell every day to change, his three-point shooting. We've seen it improve as of late. He said, I wouldn't say that I'm slumping, but I'm not shooting as well as I want. So I can say that I'm part of the issue just as well as I can say whoever is a part of the issue. He said, can you blame Clint Capela for being hurt right now? He said, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he said, can you blame when I was hurt? He said, I mean, Collins missed 8 games with a sprained left ankle earlier this season. He said, that stuff happens. So that's, again, another thing that I've been accustomed to in the league. He said, it's just not knowing what to expect each day that just helps him, John Collins, analyze it, not take any of the rumors and speculation and the critiques from, you know, fans and analysts. He doesn't take it personal. He just wants to apply, you know, as much information as he can every day for this situation that he's in. The next question they got into was about Nate Mellon. Sam said, to hear something that Nate shared this morning gives me a sense that in terms of this coach and his voice, and we all know that there's a lot of uncertainty around his future, it sounds like he's still getting through to y'all. And then Sam asks, is that dynamic going well enough? What part does that play in the puzzle? And John Collins says, I feel like we all have respect for Nate, ultimate respect for him. But as John Collins said before, when situations that are going on with our team happen and hit the media, it definitely can create an extra mess of issues that weren't necessarily there before. So, and John says, I don't know if it makes guys feel indifferent about Nate personally, but it just gives them another layer to have to deal with, something that they have to work through. And he just says that personally, he sees it as another layer that they have to work through. He can't speak for every guy and how they're feeling, but it just adds another layer of what we have to figure out here in Atlanta. And that's why John Collins said that I don't think guys are taking it personally from Nate. It just makes the situation harder. And that was a sign of a guy that kind of stood up for his coach a little bit. Kind of stood up. I mean, there's still things that Nate has to do better for this team, but certainly he's kind of saying that Nate gets a bad rep. Nate gets a bad rep, and when things go out there into the media, and I think he was indirectly referencing Trey in, you know, Nate's spat, that it's something else that they have to work through. So it kind of lends back to my, you know, synopsis is that it's on Trae Young. If you're not happy, you have to talk to your coach. You have to talk to management. You can't let that spew out to the media. You can't leak stuff to the media if that is what Trae Young is doing. I'm not accusing him of anything, but typically when stories like that do come out, it does come out from that camp through an unnamed source, through indirect channels, and goes out there and puts out narratives to kind of get wheels spinning in favor of them. But it's not helping this Hawks team work through the things that they have to work through. It's not. And like John Collins says, a lot of mental things going on. I think they have the talent to be a top 6 team in the Eastern Conference when healthy. I certainly believe that. Some people blame X's and O's, and I gave you context as far as some of the X's and O's are called by Trae Young and not by the coaching staff that people put blame on. So again, the key is Trae. Are you going to lead? Are you going to humble yourself, put your pride aside, and play for the sake of the team? Are you going to be a leader? Are you going to hold yourself accountable? Those are the things that are going to help quell some of the mental issues that are going on with this Hawks team and hopefully turn this thing around. Is he going to buy in so that they can finally figure out their identity for this iteration of the Atlanta Hawks, the 2022-2023 Atlanta Hawks basketball team, and change things around and make a run for the playoffs? Certainly, if his agenda is to get Nate McMillan out of there, you can expect that not to happen. But you can tell John Collins wants to win. Even though he doesn't know where he's going to end up, he's still going to be a professional. He's going to get up and try to just not focus on the rumors and focus on being the best John Collins he can be and help whoever is giving him a paycheck. And at this time, it's the Atlanta Hawks. He wants to help them win and be the best guy that he could possibly be and remain positive. DeJounte Murray wants to hold himself accountable to continue to get better and lead this team. Talk about communication. Talk about putting in the work, continuing to build towards something greater. Trae Young even alluded to that last night, building towards something better. But this is Trae's team. It's ultimately, you guys put it on Nate McMillan, I'm going to put it on Trae Young. What are you going to do to help turn this thing around? I said this last episode. I saw it last night. I saw him try to do it against the Lakers. But the team did not have the same energy. But how are you going to execute in the fourth quarter? Continue to keep your teammates engaged. Lead by example. Make the right plays. And play the right way. Are you going to play the right way? Because when you play the right way like you did last night and how they did in Sacramento, you're going to win more games. When you play like you do against the Lakers and the start of the Golden State Warriors and other games that they should have won this year that they didn't. Because, hey, we've seen when Trae Young doesn't play how the team responds when DeJounte Murray leaves. We don't want that to become a greater narrative. So, like I said, Trae, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Nate McMillan's future is uncertain. The team's play on the court has made that for certain. So, hey, what is Trae going to do to help right the ship? That's the question going forward. And that's the question that needs to be asked. And that is, hopefully, the answers we'll get with how he plays here on out. If hopefully he can continue that play from last night. And if you love what you heard from me today, give us a review. Give us 5-star rating. You know the drill. Share this with everyone who loves the Atlanta Hawks. Like I said, tonight is the national championship game for the Georgia Bulldogs. So this is going to be out on a Tuesday after hopefully they win the national title. If not, we're going to see a really big upset with the TCU Horned Frogs. I don't have a dog in the fight. You know, I usually go SEC over everybody. But I just want to see a good game and kick back, relax, and enjoy the finality of college football season, because the NBA is in the dog days right now. And the dog days usually coincides with the NFL playoffs, which will start this weekend. Obviously, I have no dog in the fight. The Falcons are not in it. So we all just kick back and watch the finality of the football season come to a close. But the finality of this Hawks season is not here yet. How are they going to turn this thing around? It starts with Trae Young. And we're going to talk about that going forward here on Sports Ethos Atlanta Hawks. So share this with everyone who has an affinity for the Atlanta Hawks. Put them onto our Twitter at Ethos Hawks on Twitter. That's at Ethos Hawks on Twitter. And follow me on Twitter as well at BradJarrett67. That's Brad, JARRETT67. We'll catch you guys next time. I'm going to do a shorter episode breaking down the Milwaukee Bucks matchup on Wednesday on ESPN. So that one will come out Wednesday morning, afternoon. So be on the lookout for that one. But we'll catch you guys next time. And as always, let's go Hawks.